Welcome to The Word at Westminster, a podcast with talks, studies, interviews, sermons, and more from Westminster Church in Barrie, Canada. It's about learning and living God's Word.
Hi, everyone. Today, I am happy to have on the podcast a guest, Sarah Joy Covey. She is a therapist. She's also the owner and clinical director of the Covey Wellness Center. Here's a few things about her. She has her master's in counseling psychology. She has a passion for teaching, speaking, for workshops, classes, couples, especially in the interaction of Christian faith and psychotherapy. She's been married for more than 20 years and has four children, all redheads, she points out. And she says that if she goes a day without music or nature, it doesn't feel like a good day. So I have a personal relationship and a professional relationship with Sarah. Professionally, I've referred people to her who are needing some sort of help, and several people have mentioned how helpful she or people in her practice have been. Personally, we've been on each other's podcasts. We've also co-authored a couple of articles together. In August 2021, we did an article for Faith Today magazine called Preparing for the Post-Pandemic Letdown. And then in June 2022, we wrote a piece for the Toronto Star called The Difference Between Self-Comfort and Self-Care and Why It Matters. Here's our topic. Something seems off for a lot of people. This has to do with the period after the pandemic and how some people are feeling. You're right. Many don't want to talk about it. We just want to move on from that chapter in our life. But that doesn't change the fact that many people are not feeling right, and certainly not the same as they had felt. In their thinking, perhaps energy levels, maybe some aspects of their lives have changed, sometimes dramatically. They're not sure what's going on or why. Some people can express their feelings, but some can't, especially younger people. And so that's what we sit down to discuss. And she also shares some great ideas for well-being going forward. So perhaps this will be helpful to you or maybe someone that you care about. So Sarah, we're just going to jump right into this. I just think something feels off. Okay, so, you know, who wants to talk about the pandemic? I don't. You know, it was such a big part of our lives and everything. We're kind of done with it. No one wants to talk about it. But when I say something feels off, I feel like, you know, we're talking about the pandemic being over, but many people that I talk to still feel sometimes as if something is off, and they might not articulate that. And I'm just thinking about their own mental, emotional well-being.
Sure.
And sometimes people might not even bring that up, but I'll say something that I think, yeah, something just has not been right since that. And so, you know, do you observe that? What do you think is going on?
Yeah. Well, first of all, absolutely, I observe that. We see it all the time. And one of the easiest sort of ways that I can describe what I think is going on for a lot of people is an analogy that I use when people are going through a crisis of any kind, which is that we tend to sort of white knuckle in survival mode our way through a time of crisis. And then we get to the other side, if you will, and we kind of open our hands again to a greater degree, maybe of safety or like a letdown. Right. But then sometimes we have a bit of a crash. And so I'll give an example of this. You know, if you're a parent, for example, and your child is ill in the hospital, you know, and really, you know, has had a terrible accident or has a diagnosis that's just really, really, really challenging, mm-hmm. and you're navigating it with them, you're in survival mode. You know, you are just showing up, putting one foot in front of the other the best you can, but you are really not, you're operating in your sympathetic nervous system primarily. And that's for an extended period of time. And then maybe your child comes out of that, you know, healed and on their way, and you feel like, oh, you know, this is wonderful. Like we're through it. And then you start experiencing all these emotions and all of this almost build up in your body. And this, like, I should be happy. I should be fine. I should be over it. But all of this stuff sort of comes flooding in. And I think a lot of that is because we are re-engaging with the fullness of ourselves, and the impacts of what we've been muscling through, if you will, are starting to show up. And so there's this crash sometimes emotionally or mentally that comes after a crisis. So we made it through, but we really white knuckled through. Like we didn't make it through in a lot of ways with reflection, with meaning making, with processing. We got through as best we could and bumbled our way along, you know? And so now we're at this point. And if you think of all kinds of trauma like this, we're at a point where, you know, trauma is not processed in the time that we're going through it, right? It's often processed. It could be years. Like a lot of childhood trauma is being processed with people in midlife, you know? So it takes a long time for people to be in a safe enough place, neurobiologically, physiologically, relationally, to say, okay, now I need to talk about what happened there. You know, now I need to name those things because I'm experiencing some sort of ripple after effects of that in ways that maybe I don't fully understand. I can't make meaning of, but actually it's really normal to have those feelings. And so to the point where, you know, I'm offering support groups right now for a lot of people processing their COVID stories, you know, and what's happened to them and what the fallout was and what the losses were, because they're not doing okay. And they're like, I don't understand why I'm not doing okay. Cause it's, you know, it's over, but it's not over, because it's just like anything. These things become part of our stories. It's like, if we have a significant loss in our lives, it's not over just cause it was 4 years ago that it started.
Right.
So we're finding our way forward, you know, finding our way through. We're not really able to move on. It's more like integrating the story into our lives and making meaning and healing and naming and grieving, those kinds of things.
Wow, there's so much there. Let me respond with a few thoughts that come to mind when you say this. I think one of the things is, like, even as I introduced my, you know, this segment, I said, you know, who wants to talk about it? So maybe if someone does want to talk about it, they feel like they get resistance and they're like, I can't.
Totally.
Or it is over, so I feel bad for needing to process some of these emotions. Yes. And something that's really curious, you said talking about needing kind of a safe place to talk, where you, I guess, I think that's language for a healthy place where you're not feeling, you're not going to get attacked, but you need to process this. But I wonder if that's harder for a lot of people, because I think towards the last half of the pandemic, things became much more controversial and polarized.
Oh.
And therefore, like in the political realm, I think, you know, in the church, it was hard. What do you open? How fast do you do? What do you do? What don't you do? And then in families, I think people had big disagreements around how to come out of this. What should the kids should be doing? What shouldn't they be doing? How do we think of vaccines? How do we think of the government regulations? So then people maybe need to sort of process this space in a place where they're loved, or hope that they're loved, or they have trusting relationships anyway, but feel like maybe those have been fractured. So is that part of the challenge too? That safe place is lessened.
Oh, 100%. Like, one of the biggest challenges I think that people are facing is the fallout in relationships and families over differing ideas. Like, somehow culturally we have lost our ability to engage in nuance-based conversations. And I mean, that is, you know, again, a very, very big topic, but we see a lot of people who have, you know, they said things and did things through the pandemic to other people in their families. And, you know, again, operating out of this amygdala brain survival, you know, sympathetic nervous system, and not fully online, and just be, you know, in early days of the pandemic, I just said, okay, Sarah, just remember, everybody's in trauma. Like, you're going to see people fighting. You're going to see people freezing, fawning, you know, fleeing. These are normal behaviors when people are in a traumatic situation and going into survival mode. And so in those situations, like, things were said and done. And, you know, there was no help from the media to stop the polarity of voices. And so it became really censored in a lot of ways for people. Like, to just ask a question became problematic. Like, you couldn't just say, well, I wonder about this. It was like, you have to think this, or people would just pounce, and the cancel mobs. And I mean, it just was out of control. And so I think to try and wade gently back into those very hard conversations that were so polarized and politicized, and yet it's so important for us to be talking about it, but we did not have a lot of diplomacy or mediation or, like, room for each other. We were just so rigid, you know? Yeah. And so I do think that's a big part of it. And isolation with lack of contact with other actual people, you know, and not putting faces to things, in the same way that people on, you know, social media will say things they would never say to someone's face. You know, there's this barrier that we had that fueled so much division And I think it's just really hard to step into that space and say, like, I wondered about this, because you're afraid that you're going to be judged, or that your question's not okay, or that your stance was, you know, there's just some very real harm in that interpersonal space. And, you know, people aren't the same. And there's stuff that, like, there's friendships that were years and years long, and families that just had terrible turmoil over this.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people have found their way back to each other, you know?
Yeah. I wonder also if the group of people who are struggling, and I don't know, it's too broad of a word in a sense, but who feel something's up, it isn't bigger than we think, because maybe they're not saying anything.
Yeah.
But also, like, I've got three kids, you've got, you know, kids. And so I we were very early on, as soon as it was able to, I was out in the world. I was going to the hockey rink. You know, it was good for the kids' well-being, right? So, and I'm a pastor, so I'm doing all these things. But I think people who maybe didn't have those things to kind of encourage them to get out, that there's more people alone in their apartments than we think. Sometimes they're retirees and they don't have kind of the same schedule as someone like us do with young kids and everything else.
Yeah.
And we're employed and need to physically be spaces and stuff like that too. So there's people listening to this, and who I think it's a bigger group than they think, like something is going on, but I'm kind of stuck.
Yeah. Well, I often think about, like, the principle of inertia, right? And how when we come to a stop, it's a lot harder to get us, like, once we're going, we keep going. There's momentum to the going. And so when we're out and about and we're socializing and we're exercising hospitality and we're engaging in groups and we're meeting with people and we're going for coffee dates and stuff, I mean, that came to a grinding halt, you know. And if I had to choose one single issue that was the biggest issue for me in terms of what impacted mental health, it was isolation. Isolation. That is the single biggest predictor of why, in my opinion, we are in the state we're in right now. Because no matter how much virtual connection we have, it's a substitute for real connection.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I mean, we do hybrid work. I'm not anti, you know, I'm not a Luddite, but it's not the same as being in a physical room with someone. Yeah. And seeing people and being present with other people. And so that isolation just led to so much. But when you stop all of that, the re-engagement, if you imagine that inertia, like that ball is rolling, but that boulder comes to a stop, you got to start that ball rolling again.
Yeah.
The amount of energy and momentum to get it going is so much more than if you're just going along, right? So we didn't have a choice about the grinding halt, but now people are trying to push that boulder. And it's hard because they got used to having their groceries delivered, and they got, even people, you know, interesting trends, like people who live locally, who did their therapy online with us, a lot of them haven't come back into the center. You know, they haven't
even
come back physically
close.
In, even though they live close enough to absolutely do that. Yeah. It's become a convenience that was offered, and they're kind of used to that. They become acclimatized to this way, and they've forgotten, you know, people are doing a lot of remote work, and that's good. I think there's some goodness that's come out of the flexibility for people with their work, but also I think people need to get back in the office.
Yeah.
To get around people some of that time. There's a happy medium, you know, where we have some flexibility to be at home and engaged, and it's not so much, you know, it has to be this 9-to-5 particular way.
Yeah.
But it's an overcorrection to never be in the office too.
Right.
You know, and you don't realize what you're missing when you're not around people. And so just more and more acceptance of online ways of doing things, we need to think about that with caution, you know. And I think a lot of that is just that this was convenient and this is what we did. And it can still work, but we're not really thinking, is that the best thing for me? You know?
Yeah. I want to come back to the isolation in a moment, but in terms of, you know, embodiment, physically being with people, you know, as you were talking, one of the biblical stories that comes to mind is I think of Jesus. And I was teaching through this passage last year, and people are coming to him for healing. And, you know, Jesus, you know, he sustains the universe by his powerful word. Like, and sometimes he'll heal someone over miles. They're not even in the same town as him. He has that ability. But in this situation, people are coming to him one by one. And I'm like, why is that? Well, maybe it could be because he's looking them in the eyes and he puts his hand on them. There's something to that. Like God incarnate comes to us in fleshed in Jesus. And then we have these. So yeah, there's so much there to that. I don't understand it all, but it's important. So thinking of what you've said in the isolation, and I think that, and that inertia word is really, I think, poignant. Like, for example, I was motivated to get out, like, oh, change, because the kids need to see their friends. The kids need to do this. And me too, it's good to see people. But for someone who's struggling with that inertia or something, maybe say their issue has been isolation, what do you think is the next best step for them, given that it just maybe feels like too heavy, too much?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, because people can really be struggling with social anxiety. And if that was a challenge before the pandemic, like so many challenges, if there were, I always say, like, if there were cracks, you know, then the pressure cooker of the pandemic, like, broke those cracks open, whether it was in families or relationships. So
sorry to interrupt, but before you go on, just explain to people, what do you mean by social anxiety?
Yeah, so people who generally feel a lot of discomfort being out in the world, you know, and it's not, it's more than just being an introvert where it's like draining to be with people and you need your alone time. It's really, there's a timidity and a difficulty with engaging socially, physically around people, you know, and it can have, you know, can have different forms. Like some people are okay in smaller contexts and can't do big crowds and things like that. But it's just like this, I do not feel at ease in my body in these kind of contexts. So someone like that, who now has found a way to live totally isolated, their inertia is going to be that much more difficult, right? Because it's more pronounced. But I think there's a lot of actually social anxiety, and maybe this isn't maybe exactly the clinical way to put it, but that was induced by the pandemic. So we have a lot of teens in particular who are not able to re-engage in real time, in real relationships, talking to their peers, because they're very comfortable texting them. And a simple phenomenon for this is, like, how many kids do you know that call anybody anymore? Like literally call on the phone, you know, but they're constantly in contact with their friends. But it's these different ways where there's a removal of the personal component. Right. And so I think, you know, I think there was some inducing, if you will, of that type of behavior because of the nature of the situations and the lockdowns and the mandates and, you know, all the things. And so now it's like, well, we've acclimatized to this way of being in the world. And like, what's the point? So I think the first step I would say to people is remember why it matters. Like, let's remember why it matters to be around other people, what kind of energy that brings to you, what kind of goodness that is in your life. And get a mindset for why it's going to make a difference that you go to the grocery store and talk to a clerk and not just have your groceries delivered, or that, you know, to go into a local business and establish that relationship again, where you used to get your whatever, you know, your coffee or whatever, because we've forgotten why it matters. And so if we don't have a reason for that motivation, I think that's where it has to begin, because all change, you know, begins in our minds. Right. If we look at the theory around the cycle of change, the first three stages of anything changing are before any action happens. It's always in the mind, right? Where we determine, oh, something, first of all, we don't even know we have a problem. It's pre-contemplative. Then we go into contemplation. We're like, I have a problem, but I don't know what to do about it. Like, I need to reconnect with people. I don't know what to do about it. Then it's preparation, right? And so finding, like, what might I do and figuring that out. And then it's action. So there's a lot happening behind the scenes before people get to action. And so I think the first thing is to have some of those conversations with trusted people, start to get a mindset for why this matters, why re-engagement is going to be important. Talk about why it's hard. Look at those barriers and then start, you know, then you start to have a plan to take small steps in the direction of that. And then that will, you know, success will beget success. It's a little bit of like exposure therapy, you know, that we would do with people, which is just, you know, increasing little by little to reacclimatize into whatever the thing is that you're, you know, you're trying to navigate. So, but I do think it begins with, like, it's actually not good for me to be alone and isolated.
Right.
And it's important for me to be with other people. And that acknowledgement and motivation of this will be good for me. This is a good thing for me to push back against, even though it's
Right.
really easy to stay here.
Yeah.
My health depends on me re-engaging in some way.
Right.
And then starting to build a plan. That can be really hard for people. Again, I'm always going to put a plug in for therapy, but a therapist can really help people structure that in concrete ways and say, and work through some of the feelings that are part of the resistance to moving back out into the world. But also give the, you know, goals and plans to kind of move that boulder right back and get some momentum back and things. It's a big hurdle to get started.
I think this is fresh on my mind because I just preached about it, but like people on the narrow path need people on the narrow path. And and the idea that maturity is meant to be shared. And the example I used was Paul, you know, he's this more mature Christian. He's got this authority. He's an apostle. He sees the people like the Colossians and other churches struggling. So he recognizes that they're struggling and he kind of inserts himself into the situation saying, hey, it goes on from there. But the idea of other people and identifying who is a person that will be able to be around to say helpful things. And the reason I raise that is because, you know, if we've had this tension in the families, in other places around lockdowns and vaccine, whatever it happens to be, politics, you know, if people are feeling, okay, I know I got to talk to someone to help me think through what the next steps are, but maybe they have fewer people. You mentioned therapy. That can be good. Here's a place, a space where someone is going to help me reflect in a healthy way. You know, churches can be that. Not everyone in churches, but some people hopefully are there. But maybe other things that people had, like I'm going swimming at the pool, but it wasn't just the swimming. It was I talked to Joe, and he's always there. We had a 10-minute conversation. Sometimes we went for coffee afterwards. I'm not doing that anymore, but man, was he an encourager. You know, so seeing those people connections. So I'm just encouraging.
Like incidental, through, like you
said, incidentally, those connect, which I think are more stabilizing than we think, but some of those smaller things, kind of the under the structure, have kind of departed. And we're missing them more than we know.
Yeah. I think re-engagement also, you know, it involves risk. And I think maybe we are more self-censored than we realize, and more cautious to say things because of the context we talked about before as well. But it's going to take, it's sort of like that idea of like, I'll go first, right? It's going to take people saying, hey, like, are you doing okay? Like, you know, I've heard a story of, you know, people thinking something, you know, and being a parent of a team, like their kids on a team and they're a parent sitting beside other parents and no one's kind of talking. And then somebody raises a question, just like kind of hesitantly saying like, hey, so what do you think about that? You know, and risking that vulnerability a little bit. And then the person beside them is like, oh my gosh, I would love to talk about that. Like, it's that silent majority. Like, I think there's a lot of people who have things to say and want to ask questions, but they don't even realize how much they're burying or repressing until somebody says, it's okay. It's okay for you to talk to me about this.
Yeah.
It's okay for you to say something because like I'm there too, or I have a question too, or I have, you know. And so I think, you know, thinking to ourselves, like, where are the ways where we're not saying something and wondering, is there a way to ask a question, to offer a tentative sort of olive branch into the social fabric and say, you know, how are your kids doing post pandemic with school and stuff? You know, I'm kind of worried about mine. And I think we would maybe be pleasantly surprised at how much warmth and response there would be to those conversations, whether it's on the side of the basketball or volleyball court or whether it's, you know, a coworker. I think we need that, but it's going to take some people risking going first and speaking into that weird, awkward space of it. And even to the point of where therapy can help, like if there have been fractures in families and difficult, you know, pain and bitterness and need for forgiveness, you know, therapy can help you figure out what it is that you're not saying and what you need to say and how to navigate and start to build bridges again. I really have tried to be a person through the pandemic to sort of step into that middle space and speak and hear and really seek to listen, sort of push back against, like, don't put me in a box. Don't tell me I belong at this extreme. I think that the extremes are constructs. People live mostly in a moderate middle, you know, and yet that's not the space where people are having conversations. And so, you know, I think if there's a few of us that can be courageous enough to ask the first question, you know, to wonder, to put an olive branch out, you know, I think there's some openness. And now that, again, now that people's actual neurobiology and nervous systems are coming back online and more stabilized, those conversations that really couldn't be had in a grounded kind of way, maybe some of those conversations can be had and can be healing. Yeah. You know, I think about even restorative justice principles. We had I don't know if you're familiar with restorative justice, but I'm trained in restorative justice from working in the high school. And then I use some of those pieces in our work, but it's being able to have conversations about where harm was done in a community and family, a system, and like actually having a container for that conversation to heal, you know? Yeah. So there's ways to do it. And it's not surprising to me at all that the need for that is sort of coming up now because I think people are settled a little bit more and are feeling a little more grounded. And they're like, wow, I really said some awful things to my longtime friend and I need to navigate that conversation, you know?
Yeah,
and so it's hard. It's hard, but it's going to, somebody's going to have to take the first step in that, you know, because there's a lot of fear about doing that.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah.
You mentioned children. I want to, and
yeah,
you know, there's so many, as we discussed, there's so many ways this could go. And I'm thinking of people who I almost put in, who are dealing with different things, whether it's the person who had a previously existing social anxiety, whether it's someone who wasn't able to mourn for the death of a loved one in a way that was going to be most helpful. Like, there's so many different categories.
Oh, so many things. Yeah.
In terms of children, you know, they're young, they're vulnerable, they couldn't gather, missed milestones, playoffs, graduations, lots of these sorts of things. You just maybe share a few kind of best practices, and I'm keeping in mind that also that kids were online way more than they should have, and we're going to be dealing with that for forever.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah.
Can you share just some best practices for young people to, you know, just kind of take that next best step for their mental well-being, in light of what we said, and keeping in mind that you know, we're probably talking to parents here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, so the first thing I will say is I'm not really a child specialist, but I am a teens and up specialist. So I'll speak mostly to teens if that's okay. And some of it might apply also to some of our preteens and things like that. But, you know, this hits really close to home as a mom of four kids, you know, two of whom were in high school at the time, where those years you can't get back. I remember my son Wesley saying to me, my husband and I had our 20th anniversary trip planned in March of 2020, and we were going to New York City. It was all mapped out. We were super excited. Wow. And then of course, here we were. And so we did not have that trip. And I, you know, I was just sort of saying like that was so disappointing. And my son said to me, you know what, Mom, you can go to New York again. You can do that again. He said, I'm never going to get grade 9 back.
Yeah.
And I was like, you are absolutely right. Like like you don't get another chance at those things. Mm-hmm. That's different for those kids than it was for us. And it was really stolen, so many of those precious formative things. You know, they're not on the sport. You know, my son who is super active, you know, no sports teams. And because people weren't joining back in because of that inertia.
Yeah.
You know, his grade 11 volleyball team didn't even run. There wasn't enough kids who wanted to sign up for volleyball, you know? So that's one of the things I would say, like, start doing the things again, kids, you know, and teens, like, get out, sign up for the things, go, you know, stay for the after school, whatever, you know, get in the clubs, get in the team sports, start to do the things that make you a kid, sign up for the play, take the music lessons, whatever. You know, rejoin and re-enter into that and remind yourself of those important things. And so, you know, so I think that's one thing I would say, you know, really, and parents are really going to have to encourage their kids because again, it's become really easy not to do those things. And let's be honest, it's easier on parents not to do those things right? Yeah. Like you're not driving people everywhere. And it's kind of nice to just not have to rush and have a quick dinner and go to the things. But I'll tell you what, my experience of joy watching my son play basketball, my youngest son who's really into basketball now, it's like, I don't ever want to miss a game again. You know, I just want to be there because I'm like, that was taken in a way that I didn't even realize how much that mattered. And so it's like, you know, these are the things that, you know, the stuff of life. And so, you know, that's really important. Join in again, be, you know, commit to something, re-engage. The other piece, which is this really the same for everybody, is you have to be allowed to grieve and talk about what was lost. You know, I have memories of my daughter walking around the outside of, she never got a prom. My only girl never got a prom, you know, and that's like a big deal, you know, and walking around, our graduation was her walking around in a mask, picking up different things from different stations, you know, socially distancing from all of her friends. That's not how that's supposed to go.
Yeah.
You know, it was just so surreal and terrible, and you're trying to be positive for them, but you got to name how, like, that's no good. Like that was not good for people, and say how hard it was, and grieve and work through and be angry. Right. And there's a lot of kids who are really like, that was not okay for me. And they're angry about it. You know what? Rightly so.
Well, let me jump in on that point then, because I was going to ask, like, you know, it could be anger, it could be whatever, but how would you as a parent maybe, you know, start that conversation or something? Maybe your child hasn't expressed something verbally, but you're like, something's going on, something's different. And I want to communicate to them that, hey, how are you feeling? What, like, how would you kind of maybe draw, see if that's something that maybe your kid's like, that stunk, but you know, they're okay. But what if they're not? How do you draw that? How do you know?
Yeah, that's a big question. But I think one of the things I think about is just normalizing talking about it, like modeling as parents, you know. And so in our home, we've tried to just say, you know, like I'm just upset about that thing that happened. And like, I'm showing my own emotion over it and letting my kids see that that wasn't okay, that that thing happened, or that it was hard, or that I'm grieving too. And then it becomes like normal to have emotions and to feel things. Right.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, you know, we have to be careful, obviously age appropriateness for certain things, but you know, teens, again, focusing on that, like it's important for them to see what it means to talk transparently and just, and not be pounced upon for having feelings, and normalizing that in the context of your own family sort of culture. And then that opens up the possibility to say, like, I'm not doing okay. And I think sometimes one of the best questions we can ask ourselves to know whether we're doing okay is, do you feel like yourself? You know, do I feel like myself? And kids get that. Like, you know, teens get that. It's like, I don't feel like myself, you know. And are you feeling like yourself again after the pandemic? You know, and that could open up, like, you know, and that's different for every kid, because some kids are, you know, their personalities are very different. So feeling like themselves does not look like the other kid. I have four kids. They're very different. And their feeling normal doesn't look like another person's feeling normal. Like a withdrawn kiddo who's normally withdrawn, that's normal for them. But one of my really extroverted kids who's withdrawn, that's a red flag. And so, you know, do you feel like yourself is a good question. That's a good question to ask ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. Do I feel like myself again? What's changed for me?
Yeah.
You know? Then what's different?
I really like what you said. Like, there's a lot, you know, everything, but one of the things about not pouncing on them for having feelings and emotions, I think it's something we can do. It's like they're processing something at like an 8-year-old or a 13-year-old or whatever level. And, you know, it's like, oh, you're angry or upset about something. Oh, we should be, you know, we can be thankful. Think of all the family time we had. Like, it's like, okay. Yeah. But they're processing this, and it's okay. Like, I, even myself, I'm like, okay, there was a time when I was really angry at such and such. And it's like, oh man, I'm a pastor. I shouldn't be angry. No, this is how I'm feeling. And I want to think through it. I want to be on my knees about it. I want to be, you know, seeking the wisdom of God and talking to people about it. But this is what I'm experiencing, and just allowing kids to know that you can do that. And I'm not going to pounce on you for having feelings.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's maybe a misunderstanding in Christian culture too about emotions. I mean, that's a whole conversation. There's some great books out there, like Jenny Allen just released one called Untangle Your Emotions, which I think is just super helpful. And she's got a great podcast talking about that. There's great people writing in this space to try and bridge, I think, what I think are some really unfortunate misunderstandings about emotional health. You know, and I think of people like Pete Scazzaro with Emotionally Healthy Christianity and, you know, sort of forging a pathway to this, because we have things like where we'll say, like, I shouldn't be angry. And it's sort of base, we think in scripture, but it's in your anger, do not sin. It's not, don't be angry. You're going to be angry. Anger is actually something that God has given to us to recognize what is not right in the world. So if something's not right, it's normal to be angry. And so one of the most, you know, compassionate things we can say to ourselves is, it's okay, right? It's okay that you're angry. It's okay that you're struggling. It's okay that you are feeling sad. It's okay that you're still afraid. You know, it makes sense based on what we've all gone through that some of these things are still showing up. It's like this soothing, just like, yeah, like I'd be angry too if I didn't get a prom, you know? You know, my daughter got her first, she's a huge musical theater person. She got her first big role playing Frenchie in Greece. Like, she played in many, many, many other plays, but got like a leading role, had just started rehearsals and cut off. It's like, that's a major loss for people. You don't get those years back. And just to name that and say, like, that really does actually suck. It feels like we don't want to go there because we think we're going to be overwhelmed by the emotions, but actually, that's how they move through us. To actually talk about them, name them, to say, yeah, that is hard. That makes sense. It's okay that you're ticked about that. You know, that's a big loss, right?
I want to, I'm mindful of the time, and at the end I'm going to ask how people can connect with you and
Sure.
anything you happen to be working on right now. But I want to ask a final question first about resiliency. And that's, I think it's a big topic. You know, who knows what the future holds? We don't know. The world is uncertain.
We've
Hopefully there's
never
no other
known, let's say
pandemic. We've
that.
never known. You know, there is at the time of us recording this, there's international things that are happening which are uncertain and are making people nervous. But you really don't know. So, you know, and it does seem sometimes that the world seems increasingly uncertain. But, you know, are there practices that we should be more diligent about going forward to make us resilient going into an uncertain future? Maybe things that we haven't paid as much attention to that we really should.
Well, in light of the comments about sort of the uncertainty and the encroaching of like all of the world stage into our lives from a media standpoint, I think it's really important to monitor how much media we have. I know you really believe firmly in that as well, but I think we need to make conscious and intentional decisions about that. There's some great strategies that you can implement. Again, a couple of resources. You know, Tiffany Schlain's 24/6. She's not coming at it from a religious standpoint. She has a Jewish historical sort of cultural family background, but comes at it from like, we need a full day of unplugging and restoration. So she talks about a digital Sabbath, you know. And then other people like Andy Crouch has, you know, Tech Savvy Families, like he's a great book. But I think we do need to really make conscious decisions. I think there's the tendency of the technology to set the pace for us. And I think in general, we're get letting ourselves get onto that runaway train and not thinking intentionally and consciously about why we're doing what we're doing. You know, maybe we can act just because we can be on our phones until the last second of our evenings doesn't mean we should. Just because we can access all of the news in the world and take it all in doesn't mean we should, you know, and really evaluating that and discerning what's right and good, and not with an apathetic, I don't care, but with a, what is actually mine to own, and how does this impact me and my ability to serve in the places where I actually live and find myself? A lot of the stuff we take in, we have no agency over. And we can't do a lot about it. I mean, we can pray about it, but it consumes so much of our head space and heart space that maybe we're not actually sitting with our neighbor on their front porch and talking about their cancer diagnosis. And that's where we need to be. So things like that, I think, are really important. Like, where are the limits with that? I think slowing down I think the pace of the changes in the world, we have to slow down. We have to get quiet. We have to resist the noise a bit and listen to our souls in that. I think that's a really important way to be resilient, is to push back against and find those moments. I think we need to tell ourselves the truth, right? There's so many ways we're being lied to. Our self-talk isn't honest a lot of the times. We've got to really seek out truth and cling to that. I think more than ever, maybe that is apparent, and how important that is. I mean, we talk about, you know, how the truth will set us free. And of course, the truth of Christ is at the center of all of that. But the, you know, clinging to truth is something that I'm noticing people are really anchoring to in a different way post-pandemic, maybe. And then just being aware of like healthy thinking. You know, we talked about like the battlefield for our minds, and that's true. And so there's a lot of cognitive distortions, things like catastrophizing, right? Thinking worst, what if, worst case scenario thinking all the time, you know, dichotomous thinking. So that polarized media stuff, like let's, you know, there's so much jumping to conclusions, you know, overgeneralizing. Like there's, I could talk on and on about that, but it's this stinking thinking, you know, my mom would say, it's not helpful. And so recognizing where it's like, this is an unhelpful way to process. It's keeping me in a non-resilient, if you will, space. And in order to move forward, I need to kind of move, I need to find this more flexible thinking. That's going to be really important.
Yeah. Well, the enemy loves to confuse and distract. That's
absolutely. There's no shortage of that in our world, right?
Is there a particular practice among those things? And that's, I was writing them down because that's a wonderful list. I'd like to revisit at some other point. But is there a specific kind of spiritual discipline or practice that you find that, that is like, and some people just resonate more naturally with certain things. But is there something that resonates naturally with you, that your kind of go-to spiritual practice or discipline that, that kind of helps you with that?
Yeah. You know, and I'm laughing because, it, you know, I think a lot about upstream disciplines and downstream disciplines, and there's things that like naturally resonate with us that we do easily. So for me, like those things are engagement with others. Like I really crave time with life-giving others and want to surround myself with the presence of people, which I think is so important in really good conversations. Even like the one we're having here today is so fulfilling for me. So that's sort of in my downstream, that's easy in my personality. But sometimes I think the things we need the most are the upstream disciplines, the ones that are harder for us. So for me, I call it, this is my, I don't know, tongue in cheek, but like, I think we have the lost art of porch sitting. And for me, sitting on my porch in the early hours of the morning, if now is starting to become available because it's not as cold. I like the cold, but like, you know, there's a point where you can't get out. But more and more, like that's where I find myself, or just having, just really pushing back against the noise and like having quiet. Like it seems so simple, but I'm increasingly aware of how things are back to basics. You know, I was joking with a friend of mine last week, a couple weekends ago, when we were visiting and we were at her house visiting in Guelph. And she said, we were talking about this idea of getting back to basics, like good sleep, good nutrition, nature, things like that. She said, yeah, I heard this whole thing about people talking about silent walking as a strategy. And we're laughing, but it's like, it's true. Like silent walking, like people don't go out anymore without, and I'm guilty of this too, without like a podcast. Just go for a walk and have it be silent. Like this seems like an earth shattering concept, but back to those basics, right? So for me, that's sitting on my porch. That's an anchor point for me, just in the quiet. Sometimes I read, sometimes I pray, sometimes I'll listen to a little bit of music, but just to calm, like just to slow it down, to be still, a slow morning, that really helps me. And that's different than the rest of my life. That's down, that's upstream for me. I'm swimming against the current of what I want to do, but there's so much wisdom in that for me.
That's a helpful way to think about it too, because we can feel, oh my prayer discipline, that's harder for me. Well, you know, it's easier for some people than others. And sometimes you have to force yourself to do something else. You know, but the silent walking, I remember it was a character on Downton Abbey at one point, and he was one of the characters you didn't see very often, but he would go for an evening constitutional. That was his name for like a quiet walk. I think it was an English thing, but like maybe there's someone out there that needs to institute an evening or a morning
I
constitutional. And
love
because it
that.
sounds so cool, you are going to start to do it.
Yeah, the
Anyway,
evening constitutional. I
evening
mean,
constitutional.
because it used to be because it, you know, helps with digestion, right? To
Yeah.
walk after dinner and to move your body. Like, there's
Yeah.
so it's
The
we've
constitution of one
complicated
soul.
it.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Wow.
So let's simplify it back to basics for
Yeah.
sure.
So I thank you for this time. And there's so much in,
Oh,
we
you're
have this, and it's
welcome.
like we just skim the surface of some things. But I
And the
think
time's
that
gone.
the time's
Yeah.
gone. And I truly think that there are people listening to this, or maybe a few watching, who will say, okay, there's something in there that is the next best step for me, or help them
Yeah.
to process something. And so thank you for sharing that. And just as
Yeah.
we close it out, is there how can people connect with you, and maybe something that what is something that you are working on that might be a help to people?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the biggest thing I'm working on right now is building our capacity to offer groups here at the center. The groups are something with my teaching background and just with my ministry background. I've always run groups, and I think there's a lot of power in them. And because I know that the antidote to isolation is gathering, I want to bring people together online and in person. And so what I'm working on there is we really have a philosophy of client-centeredness here at Covey Wellness Center, where I work, and I'm the owner and director in our team. And so when we think about groups, what we really want to do is build the groups that people need. So if people are like, yeah, there's a bunch of parents, we're really struggling to parent our teens out of the pandemic. Okay, if you have a group of parents that need that support, come to us, we'll build the group for you. We'll build it around
Wow.
what your perceived needs are. And that's how I think we can serve people. We don't want to tell you what you need. Come to this group that we have. We will have groups and workshops that we think are going to resonate, but we want you to tell us what you need, and we want to build the
Wow.
structure around that for you. So that's something I'm working on. I'm really passionate about. I also think it's an easier point of entry financially for people because, you know, finances are hard for people. The economy's not in a great place.
Yeah.
And so accessing caring groups can be super powerful. I believe in them, but also it can be a lesser price point for people in terms of bridging that gap for them. So that's kind of what I'm working on. And then in terms of connecting with me, so I'm social media wise, I'm pretty narrow. I'm mostly on Instagram. I'm Sarah Joy Covey on Instagram. That's me specifically, personally. And that's me. If somebody's answering you on there, it's you're talking to me. The Covey Wellness Center is run by my social media team. And so you're not talking directly to me there, although my team will let me know if someone's looking for me there. But all of the things around Covey Wellness Center and what we're doing here for holistic health, everything's available on our website, which is coveywellnesscenter.com. We have a podcast, Covey Wellness Center. We have blog posts, lots of articles on things like we talked about today, cognitive distortions, which might be helpful for people, and any number of topics there that you can sort of scan and search. There's some digital resources there too. We can even add this podcast to our digital resources there if that's helpful for people to find also in our space. But that's probably the best place. And then if you are looking for supports, there's a contact us easy peasy right from the website. So those are the best spots to find us. Someday I'm going to write a book, Matt. You know, we're getting on it. I percolate on lots of ideas, but I'm not working on that just yet.
Well, we look forward to it. But so we'll put all the links to everything Sarah just said in the online home base for this episode. But thank you so much for sharing your time with us and your wisdom and your heart for people. I know people who have been helped by you. I sometimes send people your way. So thank you for that. Everyone to listening or watching, be well, fix your eyes on Jesus, and we'll see you soon.